The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UAP reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO, UAP, and abduction phenomenon.
Dustin Eccleston is the MUFON State Director for Utah. That's the Mutual UFO Network. And he's a member of MUFON's ERT, Experiencer Resource Team, which investigates cases of close encounters and abductions. It is his absolute pleasure to work with experiencers to document, research, and help spread the word about this incredible phenomenon happening all around us every day. So I'd like to welcome to the show Mr. Dustin Eccleston. Hello, Dustin.
Hey. Thank you, David. Good to be on your show.
Well, it's good to have you. So how long have you been associated with MUFON?
Not that long, really. And if you want, I know you want to talk UFOs and stuff. You're in Detroit, right?
I am.
Okay, so if you want, we could talk the entire hour about all the antidepressants you and my doctor have us on because we're Detroit Lions fans. it's up to you, buddy.
But yeah, well, what can I say? No, I think we'll leave that for another show.
Okay. Just had to throw that in there because I am a Lions fan. So I'm pretty new to MUFON and pretty much new to the UFO realm. I always thought that there was a possibility of life out there. But it wasn't probably until 2017, 2018 that I really started diving down that rabbit hole. And what did it for me was being in Utah. I've lived here my entire life. And I just, in a weird kind of crazy way, stumbled upon that Skinwalker Ranch was here. And I was whoa, that's kind of a weird place. So that's when I started researching about it and reading into it. And it really sort of was that opening to go down that portal and learn about everything that I could about that area. So, yeah, I just started from there. And I'm one of those people that doesn't have... I would call like micro passions. Like a lot of people every weekend, they're doing something like, oh, I'm going to a pottery class. I'm going for a hike, this and that. And they have a whole bunch of little passions. I have a handful of, I wouldn't even say a handful, maybe like two or three passions, but what I'm passionate about, I'm like a dog with a bone. I can't let it go. And the UFO thing was one of those things where I just could not let it go.
All right.
Yeah.
That's me.
Yeah, I know. And it's so great to meet people like you and fellow MUFON people who love to talk shop, I guess, because it's weird. What you live inside this bubble where the UFO thing's like the most important thing to you, and when you meet people like you and other people and you talk about it, it's so amazing. And then when you leave that bubble, sometimes you can't believe that people aren't into it, or sometimes you'll hear someone go, "Yeah, I haven't really thought about it, like whether or not UFOs exist," and you kind of go, "How is that? How is that possible?"
I had one guy tell me, even if it's true, I don't care. Now, how is that possible?
I think people say that. I think they're so afraid to be tied into that old stereotype of, hey, anyone who believes in UFOs is crazy, that they're willing to just say, hey, I don't think about it. I've never really thought about it. But the truth is, there's really two big questions. What happens when we die and are we alone in the universe?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's thought about that. I mean, come on. Every single person has sat down and pondered that. So I think it's something that people have always thought about, but they're afraid to say it out loud.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. You're right. So how long have you been Utah State Director?
Recently, in April of this year.
Really?
I became State Director. Yeah, so less than a year, I guess 5 months.
How did that happen?
So the original director, Brian Lindley, great guy. He's the one that trained me to be a field investigator. He's really one of the greatest. I couldn't have asked for a better state director.
Mm-hmm.
And allegedly, he was involved with the Watergate hotel incident. And he stepped down because he was just too busy with stuff. So he has a wife. He has kids. He's an incredible artist. So he'll do commission work for like painting canvas paintings, or he'll actually paint like motorcycle gas tanks with the airbrushing, and it's just beautiful. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it got to a point where it was just too much. Like he had too many responsibilities, too many side hustles. And, he just said, man, I'm sort of like burnt out and wanted to step down. And I sort of begged him not to. I was so afraid of sort of taking that position at first. But I've embraced it and I've taken it on. I really love it. I think it was a great decision to take it on. I always feared, because when I first tried to be a field investigator, Utah didn't even have a state director. It was someone in another state that was overlooking Utah. And that always felt weird to me.
Yeah.
And I said, it needs to have someone that's local, someone that's been here for a while.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of stepped up to the plate, and I'm still learning. I'm still trying to understand what my roles are and how to grow the chapter. So it's been exciting, but it's also been very rewarding.
How many investigators do you have in Utah?
So it's literally me and one other guy, Ben really? Stoll. Yep. Yeah. Who's just now became the assistant state director. So mm-hmm. we have some people that have bought the field investigator guides, but none of them have completed it yet. We have one that I believe is very close. I keep in contact with her, and I'm hoping that she's close to finish line. So we definitely could use some more field investigators. Utah is starting to blow up, and we're stretched thin, I would say, as far as like how many cases we get per year for how many divvied up between the two of us.
Right. So have you personally had any close encounters, experiences, abductions or anything?
So when I joined MUFON, no. However, back in April of this year, there's a guy named Ryan Burns who owns a property called Space Wolf Research. It's it shares a property line with Skinwalker Ranch, and it's just south of there.
Mm-hmm.
So I hate to admit this, but as soon as I became state director, I sort of threw around my title and was like, hey, would you be willing to let us on the property?
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of the nicest, gracious people ever. Him and his mother are amazing. And they said, yeah, we'll have you out. We're here these days. And so the day before we were to go out there, it started raining like crazy here and there. And it was supposed to rain again the next day. And I was like, oh, man, we're going to get rained out. Next day, I'm driving there from Salt Lake City. It's all the way in Mighton, so it's about 2.5 hours away. Raining like crazy. We get there. Finally, the weather breaks a little bit. He shows us the property. And he's had some very weird stuff happen on there as well. There's a cabin sort of on the middle of the property, and he parked his 40-foot RV there, and a lightning bolt hit it and just incinerated it. There's still melted pieces of metal all over the property.
Wow.
So he then put a storage container, one of those giant metal storage containers, on the property next to where that lightning bolt hit. And he had it facing east to west in between the cabin and that. And he said it was awesome because he could just pull his camper van in between. It would block wind from both sides.
Mm.
So one day he gets a call from his caretaker, and at the main property, you can kind of see the cabin, and he's looking from the main living quarters, and he goes, whoa, the shipping container's gone. So he calls Ryan and goes, hey, that shipping container is gone. And Ryan's like, what? How is that possible? And he goes, I don't know. It's just gone. I can't see it anymore. So Ryan rushes to the property. They get on the property. They find out that it didn't disappear, but it was running from east to west. And somewhere along the lines, it turned, and now it's facing north to south. And the cabin that's nearby actually has scrape marks where this thing was dropped next to it. And the only thing they saw underneath it was a couple of rocks disturbed. So they think that it, something was actually picked it up in the air and twisted it. So now it's running north and south.
Hmm.
So he's showing us this. He's showing us the melted pieces of metal on the ground. And then we have some lunch and it starts raining like crazy. And we go inside his house. And I was like, man, this is some crazy rain. And he said, yeah, usually activity happens during a new moon or after extreme weather. So I said, oh, maybe that's, you know, lucky for us. The weather breaks. We go outside. It's still a little muddy, but no big deal. We sort of did a loop of the property. Me and my buddy Cody, who I took out there. And we had an electromagnetic trifield meter. Alpha Labs, like a really nice one. And we were taking electromagnetic readings as we got closer and closer to Skinwalker Ranch. And as the closer you get to Skinwalker Ranch, the more frequent and high the blips were on the meter. So we're like, oh, that's kind of cool. We just circled the property. We came back on, told everyone about that. They go, okay, that's great. Nightfall hits. And I said, man, I'm going to fly a drone and just point it towards, because his property it sits a little higher than Skinwalker Ranch. So you have a beautiful view of Skinwalker Ridge.
Hmm.
You can see it very well from there. So I go, I'm going to just fly my drone in the air and just record that. Maybe something will happen. Maybe something won't. Fire up the drone. And I get an error. It says, compass calibration error. Please move away from any magnets or metal. Now, I've flown this drone over 50 times. I've never seen that error, David. I was like, whoa, this is crazy. So I whip out my phone. And I look at the compass on my iPhone, and it says, compass error, cannot find true magnetic north.
Really?
Yeah, and then Cody whipped out his phone, and he had one of those astronomy apps, so he's looking at the constellations in the sky, and he's holding his hand as perfectly still as he could, and the constellations on the phone were bouncing back and forth, as if his phone couldn't figure out where north was or which direction he was pointing at.
Mm-hmm.
It's very strange. So he said, oh, man, that's... And it's funny because Ryan, who owns the property, he's been there a million times. He's had a million experiences. I hurried and called him over. I said, hey, look at this drone error, like compass error. And he just sort of went, oh, yeah, I get that all the time on my drone. He's seen so much stuff. It was like no big deal to him.
Is he associated with the ranch or?
Yeah. So he owns the property. It's called Space Wolf Research. So he owns the south part. And there's a property line. And then Skinwalker Ranch is in the north.
Okay.
So Cody and I said, I had a trail camera. I said, let's just go set up a trail camera. So there's this little creek that's on the east of the property. So we walk down there and we find a fence post and we strap the trail camera down.
Mm-hmm.
And I have it set to record video because sometimes it's so hard to understand pictures that you see on a trail cam. So I have it set to record video. So we get maybe 10 feet away from the trail cam and we hear this noise. That wasn't coming from around us, David. It was coming from above our head. And it sounded like a whooshing sound, like a whoom sound.
Hmm.
And I asked Cody, did you hear that? And he goes, yeah. And we were kind of like puzzled because we couldn't see, like have a direction on it. It was like right above our heads. And Cody, who I was with, likened it to like waving a big piece of tin.
Yeah.
To me, it kind of sounded like a big bird, like almost like a pterodactyl in the movies when it goes whoom. And, so we're sitting there. We hear it again. We hear the sound a third time. I'm like, what is that? We're starting to like go, how is that? The clouds have left. That can't be thunder. It doesn't sound like thunder. So then we're staring in the sky and I see this white light go from just like a white orb in the sky, go from south to north for maybe 3 seconds top. And it just disappears. And I go, maybe that was just an airplane. And I tell Cody, I go, hey, is there a cloud there? And we're looking, we're like, no, there's no cloud. So while I'm looking at some things, Cody sees one and his dropped directly down to earth. It started up top and it just went down to earth for about 3 seconds, disappeared. All the time we keep hearing that whoom sound above our heads.
Mm-hmm.
Then we both catch one and we actually caught this one on film. You can go on the YouTube channel and see the whole video of everything. It was going from east to west. Once again, maybe 3 seconds, you see this lighted little orb fly for 3 seconds and just disappear.
Mm-hmm.
So in that moment, we're like, is it satellites? But during that time, we saw a couple satellites, and it, I kind of know satellites being out there. And also we whipped out the satellite tracker, and it wasn't those. Like, it was just sort of weird. We didn't know what the hell it was. So we continued on. We wanted to go to the property line between Skinwalker Ranch and there. And once those sounds halted, we never saw anything again. So we went to the end of the property, and Ryan texted me, and he said, "Hey, I think you went beyond the boundaries." And I looked at Cody, I go, "That's weird. We never went beyond the boundaries." So I just texted him back something like, "No, were you guys waving around or moving metal? Because we heard this weird sound." And he told me, "No." I said, "Weird." So we went back to camp, and I was telling him, "Man, yeah, we didn't go beyond the boundaries. We went right up to the line." And he told me he was looking at us through a psionics night vision camera, one of those monocles. And he said, "Yeah, it's weird. At first, I could see your two flashlights. I could see you, Cody's flashlight and your flashlight." And he said, "There was this weird light that was more on the Skinwalker Ranch side. It was kind of hovering next to a tree, and it was kind of following you guys for a bit. And then it disappeared." And he got one quick picture of it, which is in the video as well. You can check it out. And after I heard that, I was just like, "Yeah, we're done." Like, I told Cody, "Let's just call it a night. I don't want to press our luck." So to answer your question, I joined MUFON without even experiencing anything. But since then, I've been back to the ranch multiple times. And two of the three times I've been there, I've seen things.
Wow. So. I have to take one moment to remind my listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, your host. And today our guest is Dustin Eskelson.
There you go.
Eskelson. Did I mispronounce it the first?
It's one of the worst names ever. I should probably get it changed to something simple.
I apologize. But Dustin, you're good. I'm going to push my luck here. Dustin Eskelson.
There you go.
Hey. And he is the state director for MUFON in Utah. So I'll just call you Dustin, if that's all right with you.
That works for me, as long as you let me call you David.
Please call me David or Dave. I don't care.
Okay.
But at any rate, back to this. Yeah, that's the elephant in the room here, is the the ranch.
Yep.
Skinwalker Ranch. Now, how closely is Utah MUFON involved with the scientific investigations at Skinwalker?
So in the past, I believe we've had some field investigators go out there. Now, this is before my time. Since then, we've not had actually been on the ranch. They are really sort of selective on who they let on. And for good reason. They're constantly doing scientific studies. They have a million different sensors there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they just don't want to muddy the waters with a bunch of people coming in with their own equipment, their own sensors, unless it makes sense for trying to get certain data that they may need that they have to consult with. So if you watch a show, they bring in like a lot of consultants. One's like one they did last season where they brought in like hundreds of drones to fly in the sky at once.
Oh my, yeah.
So
that fell out of the sky, right?
Yeah, they just rained down. They called it a Drone-ageddon, I think the name of the episode. It's a really good episode.
Yeah.
Unless you owned all those drones, and now you have hundreds of thousands of dollars of dead drones.
Wow.
So I would love, that would be my dream come true, if they just let me, give me the grand tour of the ranch, or just said, "Hey, come hang out for like 1 hour." I'd be cool with that.
Have you asked them?
Yes, I have reached out. I haven't heard anything back. So I know they're busy. I know they're on tour and they do all these things. I can tell how feverishly the fans are for Skinwalker Ranch. There's a local convention called Phenomicon, which I was lucky enough to be invited out and be part of a panel on. And I can tell you, man, it sold out this year. It's only fourth year, and it's in a town called Vernal, which is a pretty small town. And they had 47 out of the 50 states represented there. So yeah, a bunch of people came out. They sold 1,200 tickets. It sold out. They had to turn people away at the door. It was a blast. It was a really cool convention. I've been there. This is my third time. Excuse me.
And what went down at this convention?
So they had a bunch of speakers. You had Nick Pope.
Okay.
And William Henry from Ancient Aliens. You had the entire cast of Skinwalker Ranch. David Pilates, Missing 411, gave a speech there. There's a local guy named James Keenan who has done a lot of research about the ranch. He's also studied Blind Frog Ranch, and his data and his presentations are second to none. Like, it's phenomenal the kind of work that he's put into it. So he gave a presentation. They also do paranormal and Bigfoot stuff too. So it's sort of the holy trinity. You got UFO, you got paranormal, and you got Bigfoot there.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun. Anyone that's in the area or wants to come out and check it out, definitely do next year.
Wow. Yeah, do you have flyers to go out or emails go out to people?
Yeah, I usually just follow them on social media. If you just go on like Instagram or Facebook, they'll let you know. And they already have a date for 2025. And I believe they said the tickets will start selling in February, possibly early February. Hmm. So get them as soon as possible, especially if you want. They have like VIP packages, and they have tours and add-on packages where you can have like lunch with certain cast members. You can actually do a walk the perimeter of Skinwalker Ranch if you want. They'll take you out there. So I know that one sells out within minutes of when they release it.
I will bet you.
Yeah. It's a very fun time, very cool. And I hope to be back, whether it's in a presenting form or just as a fan next year.
Yeah. Yeah. So Robert Bigelow of the National Institute of Discovery Science, or NIDS, bought the ranch back in 1996 to do some of his own investigations, and shared a lot of his findings with MUFON at that time. Then he stopped doing so and sold the ranch. Do you know why he gave up those investigations?
So I don't know. My guess would be is he was given that $22 million from the government to study the ranch. Yeah. At some point, they tried to pull it away from him. I think when they sort of found out, whoa, we're spending money on what? This like mystery magical ranch. That I think he sort of maybe started to lose interest in, hey, you guys promised me this $22 million, and they started fighting to get some of that back. I also think he probably got whatever he needed as much as he could with the instrumentation and the scientists that he brought on the ranch himself. I think he finally exhausted all the avenues of exploring that. And it's funny you just brought that up, because just this weekend I was at Mount Wilson Ranch in Nevada, which he also bought around the same time as Skinwalker Ranch, and used money and NIDS to investigate that ranch as well. And I can tell you there's some crazy stuff going on at Mount Wilson Ranch as well. Hmm. The owner, Jeff McBurney, had me out. He's one of the greatest guys ever. He couldn't be there. So it was just me and my buddy Cody came out, and his girlfriend, she goes by Knick Knack. Her name's Nicole. She was one of the sweetest people ever. And that ranch has an incredibly rich history, David. They believe that there's something underneath the ground, possibly built a mile deep, and possibly has like a town underneath that possibly Howard Hughes had something to do with.
Which ranch building are we talking about now?
This is Mount Wilson Ranch in Nevada.
Oh, okay.
So it's in the middle of Piche. I hope I'm saying that right. Pioche, Nevada. And so Bigelow bought that ranch and he studied it as well. And then when Jeff McBurney bought it, and Jeff told me this, he said, I was in a call with, and he might've been in person with Robert Bigelow. He bought the ranch because he just wanted a place to kind of chill and hang out. And Bigelow told him, hey, there's a portal on that mountain and that ranch. And Jeff sort of laughed. He goes, really? Okay, whatever. And since then they've had some really amazing experiences that has got him involved. And he's really digging deep, literally with a machine. If you go on the ranch, you'll see a backhoe, and they're digging deep to try and figure out what's going on. They keep pulling out like rail car tracks and engines and this big light fixture they pulled out of the ground. And they don't know why the hell all this is buried there, but they continue digging and trying to figure it out.
Are we back to talking about Skinwalker Ranch now?
No, this is Mount Wilson.
I remember the same thing watching on TV, Skinwalker. They found all these railroad tracks and buried.
So and you know what? There is a lot of speculation as to there may be an underground something at Skinwalker Ranch that's man-made. Something, some sort of tunnel, some base, some sort of bunker.
So maybe the train tracks run between both ranches. What do you think?
Yeah, it could be.
Or more ranches.
Exactly. I mean, if you talk about trying to hide what you're doing, I mean, the best thing to do if you're a government and you're trying to hide what you're doing, do it underground.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You have Dugway Airfield, like the Dugway in Utah. It's the biggest land-wise known military base in America, and a lot of it's underground. So right. You don't know what the hell's going on under there. And it would just make sense, right? If you had a hotspot that all this weird phenomenal activity is happening, but you didn't want the public to know, well, let's build something underground to kind of see what's going on and hide it from the public. And Mount Wilson Ranch, there's an airport there right next to it. It's in the middle of nowhere, yet they had an airport there with a mile-long runway. And it's about a mile away from the actual ranch. And you go, huh, if you had to fly in supplies and people, you're going to need an airport.
Yeah.
And so they had one there. It was like a mile. You can still see it on Google Maps. There's a mile-long runway that was there. And the road used to be paved a long time ago. If you're driving, it's all dirt now. But there's pieces of it that you can still see. At one point, had asphalt. And I know asphalt lasts a long time until to the point where you can only see chunks of it in the ground anymore. We're talking probably the 40s or 50s they were doing something out there. Mm. It's just, yeah, it's got a phenomenal history. It's possibly tied to Howard Hughes, Jeff was telling me. So it's quite the mystery, that and Skinwalker Ranch. I'm fascinated by both those.
Yeah. So Travis Taylor and his team seem to have found proof of a vortex or wormhole at least two locations on the property. What does MUFON know or think about that?
Could definitely be. So you have a lot of activity at what's called the triangle there. And for whatever reason, about exactly 1 mile above is when you start getting weird readings or mm-hmm. you get gaps in the GPS.
Mm-hmm.
They even sent that balloon up where they lost a fraction of a second, which doesn't seem like a lot. But when instrumentation's involved, you go, man, is there something up there, like you talk about, maybe a wormhole that's twisting space and time to the point where it's manipulating time.
Yeah.
And then you have whatever's in the mesa. So they finally, this season, were able to drill from the bottom all the way up to the top. And what's interesting is the whole theory of maybe something being in the mesa, these drills have a sensor in the tip that'll give you like how fast the bit's running, how hot it is. And the way they figure out where it's at is you stand above ground with a receiver and this thing will transmit. And they actually see, well, how strong is that signal? And that's how they know, oh, I'm right above the drill bit, wherever they're at. So when they're on the mesa, I forget how many feet they were to get to the top. All of a sudden, they had an equal amount of strength no matter where the person moved. And so from our scientific perspective, the only way you can do that is if it's hitting some object that's distributing the signal equally to the top of the mesa.
Mm-hmm.
So you go, oh, is there something inside the mesa that's actually spreading these signals out and making us think that everything, that this drill bits, no matter, I could walk 10 feet this way and the signal's still the same. Walk 10 feet that way, the signal's still the same. So the big mystery is what the hell's in that mesa? What the hell's above the triangle?
You know, I've said before, why don't they use dynamite? Blow some of that mesa up.
Right.
And if they're afraid of destroying... If let's say that they believe that there's a UFO that came from another planet in that mesa, they're afraid of destroying that. I don't think so. You know, that craft has come all this way and avoided being destroyed by debris, space debris, and asteroids and what have you.
Right.
I think it would be able to withstand a couple of sticks of dynamite, don't you?
Yeah. And they've talked about that before, right? Because just like you said, people go, why don't you just dismantle the entire mesa, just dig it out?
Yeah.
They talk about how they don't want to disturb the natural, you know, beauty of the mesa, and it is beautiful. But also, I don't know about the legalities of, so the mesa itself, they own like the face of it, but the top of it, I don't believe they own. It's sort of one of those weird land. I don't understand how ownership works of land. I've sort of given up on that. But the top of the mesa they don't own. So I wonder if your theory is, well, let's just blow it all out, it would make that top part slump down. And if someone else owns that, that possibly may be a legality issue. But yeah, you're right. I mean, people have talked about just take every rock out one by one.
Yeah.
Shovel some dirt, dig it in there. And I'm sure certain people, if they own the ranch, would do that, right?
Yeah.
They are worried about, like you said, possibly destroying, scratching, or disrupting whatever's inside there. So it's almost like an archaeological dig. You kind of have to gently brush those particles off the bones of dinosaurs.
Then again, those bits go in there, drill bits go in there, and when they dredge out the refuse, there's bits and pieces of metallic material that where'd this come from, you know?
Yep.
And it looks like shale, actually.
It does. And I think in one of the episodes, they were talking about how there was one of the samples they got. And I think it was that sort of like gloop, that gloppy stuff, that green sort of gloop that they got out of there was possibly from the only microbes that they saw in it were something they would see in the sea or some sort of body of water like that. It is interesting, though, the mesa itself does have a little, like, pond on it, and there is water that kind of runs all the way underneath Skinwalker Ranch.
Yeah.
And James Keenan was talking about that at the event, how that water is pretty saline, and so it can technically hold a charge. So is there some way that this water underneath is getting a charge? To me, it would have to be an incredible amount of energy to sort of have the electromagnetic stuff go on there.
Yeah.
So what the hell is charging that water if not naturally?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, the entire Uinta Basin has some hot spots. There's been books written about it. I know that famous, the Utah UFO Display, which is an amazing book about, Junior Hicks was a high school and junior high science teacher who was sort of the local MUFON guy in the 60s and 70s. So if people saw something, they went to him. Right. And he kept meticulous records of everything from all these people. And he met a guy named Frank Salisbury, who's a very bright guy, PhD, and they wrote that book together. And from all the cases that they got at the time, they believed that by 1973, 10% of the population in the Uinta Basin had excellent sightings.
Hmm.
So this area is really has always been a hot spot. There's even Native American lore that goes back hundreds of years about this area. Yeah. So it's got such a rich history of the unknown.
Speaking of the water, there's that creek or river, or I don't know what they refer to it as, that they walk down. It's very shallow, but they walk down. They found the remains of what appears to be a dire wolf.
So that is one of the most fascinating things, absolutely. And I can tell you when we were on space wolf research, Cody and I were wandering the property, and we found an almost 2-inch long, what we believe to be a canine tooth on the space wolf property. And I've tried to reach out to University of Utah. I want someone to look at this and just sort of confirm or deny whether or not this is a dire wolf. But there have been many sightings over the years of people saying, hey, I saw a dire wolf in the area, whether it's on Skinwalker Ranch with the Shermans and their famous stories of attacking the cows there, the cattle, and just in neighboring areas, people have seen, yeah, I saw this giant wolf. And of course, you know, most of the population probably laugh at them. But at some point you go, okay, all these people are seeing this. Are we going to just discredit every single person that sees this giant wolf wandering around just because we think that maybe
can't
exist?
Then again, what do these people who are poo-pooing the wolf theory, what do they know about dire wolves?
Correct. You know? Yeah, I think you're right.
The average person doesn't know about the dire wolves because they're allegedly extinct. Yet they keep showing up dead or alive at Skinwalker Ranch, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And other locations.
Yeah, there's enough sightings to make you go, there's something here, whether they're here physically like you or I, or they're popping in and out of some sort of interdimensional portal, you know, much like a Bigfoot or a Mothman or whatever. So, yeah.
So what is your opinion on the wormhole theory?
There has to be something there. We're seeing the effects of the energy, I believe, that these wormholes or these portals near the ranch or on the ranch are exhibiting. We're getting huge spikes in electromagnetic energy, which I witnessed personally when I was next to the place. People are getting sick. They get, you know, radiation that will just somehow happen in a certain area, but not everywhere else for a certain amount of time and then just disappear. So something's going on there's these massive bursts of energy, I think, that are happening in the area that are possibly allowing things to come in and out. Now, whether that's a wormhole to another far off galaxy, or is that a wormhole to another dimension? Is that a wormhole to another time, which would explain the Direwolf situation? Maybe it's all three. It's hard to say, but I do believe that there's something going on there that's allowing something from a different reality or a different space to come into ours,
right?
And possibly vice versa.
Right. I have to take one more break to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, and that's 89.3 if you're on the radio. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm your host, David Twitchell, and we're speaking with the State Director for Utah for MUFON, Mr. Dustin Eskelson. There, I said it.
There you go.
And we're talking about the Skinwalker Ranch and other ranches over there in Utah. And so has the team investigating Skinwalker Ranch. Has that team shared anything with MUFON that may be forthcoming in future episodes?
Not that I know of. No, I would love to sort of brainstorm or be of service in any way to them. It is interesting, though, as far as like MUFON data is concerned. One day I was curious as to which counties per capita have the most instances of MUFON investigators deeming a case as unknown. So when I crunched the numbers, I just assumed we'd have like all the counties that are in the Uinta Basin, right? Just knock it out. No questions asked. When I crunched those numbers, David, I found out that the top four counties per capita of unknown cases were all in southern Utah. And also, if you look at the individual cases themselves, you have more cases of the close encounter, missing time. Seeing beings, like, it really, Utah itself on both ends, the northeast where the Uinta Basin's at, and the southern area are just red hot. And the University of Utah has actually put out a paper about UAPs and sort of what they mean to the world. And they analyzed New Fork data, because New Fork's public data, and they did a heat map once again with all the counties. And if you look at the whole map, you have the four corner states in Nevada, which are red hot, but Utah, the southern area, is just bright red. So my whole thing is, the Uinta Basin, I'm so glad it's finally getting its credit due, and I'm so glad the Skinwalker Ranch people are looking into that, and we're actually looking at all these areas. But I believe there's something going on in southern Utah that could even rival or possibly beat Skinwalker Ranch, as far as I guarantee you there's another Skinwalker Ranch-esque area in southern Utah. And I my guess is, from looking at the data, it's somewhere around the Canyonlands National Parks area. All those counties that I talked about that are on the top four list all sort of somewhat come close or touch Canyonlands National Park.
I know you mentioned in an email earlier to me that this past July you had two amazing cases in southern Utah. Can you tell us about those?
Yeah, absolutely. So we had a case in, there's a town called Newcastle, which is about, it's in southern Utah, but it's about 30 miles west of Cedar City. And then this guy lived in between Newcastle and Barrow. So he's almost about 40 miles away from Cedar City, and he lives in the middle of nowhere. And one day he was out walking his dog, and he had his neighbor with him, and they're walking. And he told me I'm retired now. So one of the things I've taken up is stargazing at night. So I will go outside. I'll sit on my deck. I'll look at the stars. And it was around sunset when they're walking. And he just noticed this very bright object in the sky above this hill. And he thought it was so odd because the night before, the first object he could kind of see that was even close to that bright wasn't in that same area. So he geniusly whipped out his phone and just started recording it. And we have about 40-second video of this very bright object sitting above a hill, and then it just disappears. And so we looked into, well, could it be a helicopter or an airplane? So it wasn't blinking. There was two helicopters in the east where he saw it, but they were 38 miles away in Cedar City. So I don't think it's that. The ISS was in the southeast. But the ISS, the International Space Station, if you ever see it from Earth or you see videos of it, that thing's cruising. That thing's moving quick. That's going like 17,500 miles per hour. Right. It orbits the Earth every 90 minutes. So it wasn't that. And there was no like star or planet in that area that we could say that it was. And so the video is pretty compelling. And then you have the other one I was talking to you in the email about is from a town called Beaver, which is in southern Utah as well. We had a wife and a husband. The husband was driving. The wife was sitting in the passenger seat. They were driving northbound, and they had a dash cam on. And it was a really nice dash cam. It gives you the date and time stamp, their GPS location, how fast they were going. And they were also filming in 2K resolution at 60 frames per second. So the wife, they're driving. The wife sees this black object just zoom by the car so quickly that it freaked her out. She whipped her head back and saw it for another split second. It was just gone. So they pull over to the side of the road. They pull four screenshots from the dash cam. It could connect to his phone. So they submit those to MUFON with the original case. And looking at the screenshots, I assigned it to my investigator, Ben Stoll, the assistant state director. And I said, hey, it may be a bug or a bird. I don't know. It just might be one of those. See if you can get the video of it. He goes, sure thing. So he gets the video and he texts me. He goes, dude, this is the weirdest thing. There's the timestamp on the screenshots, and I'm looking at the video at that same time, and I don't see anything. And I go, how is that possible? So I ask him, hey, send me the link to that video. So he sends it to me, and he goes, hey, I just figured it out. I had to bring it into a video editing software and go frame by frame. So there's this object we have for 10 frames, David. That's all we got of it. So 10 frames at 60 frames per second. We have it for 1/6 of a second. And it's hard to tell distance because all we have is one camera lens. You know, it's right. Almost like if you cover one eye, you don't have depth perception. However, the way it looks, you can kind of tell it started possibly like pretty far away in the clouds, or at least near there. And so you can see it start, and it goes next to the car. And so there's one part where you can kind of see the car ahead and the diesel ahead, and it looks like it's probably in between the two of them. And I was thinking, well, how are we going to guess like distance on this? Let's say, humor me for a second. Let's say it's between these two diesels ahead of this guy on the dash cam. Within three frames, it's already gone. And so I looked up how long the lines on the road were, and there's actually regulations on it. So each line, those white lines on the road, are 10 feet apiece, and in between is 30 feet. And we had about six of those. So we had about 240 feet between the car and this object before it zooms by. Anyways, I won't bore you with the math, but when we crunch the numbers, we estimate that this thing was cruising at 3,100 miles per hour. Now,
3,000.
Yeah. And I'm being generous because that last frame, it's already behind them. So I think it's probably going 3,000 to possibly 4,000 miles per hour. And so I told Ben, I go, there's no way it's a bug. It's too big. It's just this object that kind of you can see pretty well in the camera. I did tell him, however, I do believe it may still be a bird. If that bird had a rocket up its ass.
Yeah. That's kind of the way I would address a skeptic who said, oh, it was probably a bird.
Right.
You ever see a bird like that?
Zooming that fast? But yeah, it was interesting. There's four frames too where you see two objects, a dot that originally started and this other one breaks away from it. So it could be what's known as like a refresh rate where that one area pixels stay the same for four frames. It's sort of a software or a hardware issue. Or it could be that there was two objects that we were seeing. Or it could be that that dot that this thing breaks away from or possibly comes out of is the portal or the porthole. It's a pretty amazing video.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm a firm believer in portholes, given I witnessed one, and I won't get into that because my listeners have heard it too many times.
Well, I'll have to hold you to that because I'm portals fascinate me probably more than anything. They're just something of science, what we think is science fiction, but it's actually science fact. Like they're just happening and people see them and or you hear stories about people seeing them and then having some sort of decision as to, do I go inside of it and leave this reality forever? Or do I stay here and be with my family? And you hear stories about that and you kind of go, man, even though it's just a portal and you think it's somewhere to go, I think there's some intelligence in it that sort of tells these people that in their head.
Yeah.
Like you have a decision to make right now. And yeah.
Have you heard that? Let's say, call them abductees.
Okay.
Have been given the decision to go with them or stay?
So I haven't heard that. I have heard with the portals, and this is not a MUFON story. I was reading about someone whose father saw a portal on Mount Shasta.
Mm-hmm.
And he was out. I can't remember if he was hunting or walking around. He came home, and the kid was pretty young at the time, and he came home, and he said his dad was just, like, shooken up to the point where his mom had to, like, sit down at the table, and they were discussing it, and he didn't really hear that much about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then years and years later, I think his dad had passed away. He finally had the courage to ask his mom. He goes, remember that time dad came back from Mount Shasta and he was just completely out of it? Like, what was that about? And she finally told him that, yeah, he was walking along and he saw a portal open up. And for some reason, he knew that he had a choice. Go in this portal, go wherever the hell that goes, or you can stay in this reality and be with your family. And he decided to stay here. And so there's some sort of weird intelligence behind, and when you talk about abductees, I don't know about whether or not they have a decision to come or go with them, but I know abductees, I've talked with multiple, especially being in the ERT team, we talk nothing but, you know, close encounters or people who've been taken. It seems like they always have some sort of knowledge that was given to them but wasn't spoken to them. They didn't read it on a note, they didn't read it on a piece of paper. It's sort of bestowed upon them, almost like it was downloaded into their brain.
Right, right.
And that's fascinating to me as well, because I've had experiencers tell me, like, I don't know how I know this, but this is how things are.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like near death experiences when they say, when I got over to the other side, I knew everything that there is to know. And when I came back, I gradually, but I would say quickly, forgot it. Now, was that a dream? Is it actually part of the death experience? I've talked to mediums who say that is true. Once we're over there, we know everything, you know, kind of like the Akashic records. You're familiar with that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you have access to the Akashic records, everything that ever was and will be, and that all time is, will be it past, present, or future, is happening simultaneously. I was told that by a priest.
Really?
Yeah.
That sounds like a cool priest, actually.
Yeah, he was into the UFO phenomenon, and he liked my show. I had this was a television show before it was a radio show, and he was into that, and he wanted to talk to me about it, and he said, he says I've had experiences where I've been on the other side, and all time is one. All time is one. You know, you can't really wrap your head around that, but then we can't wrap our heads around the UFO phenomenon as it is. So a lot to discuss, a lot to find out, a lot to know,
But absolutely.
I don't think we'll ever know, because like I say, we just can't, as human beings, wrap our heads around it. But that's enough of me talking. Now back to my guest.
No, that's what you're saying makes 100% sense. And I think what you say to me shows possible evidence of a universal consciousness, right?
Right.
Near-death experience where you cross over and now all of a sudden you have all this knowledge from every time era, everything in the world. But then when you get pulled back here, it's almost like you got a taste of that universal consciousness. And now you're back in your own head a little bit.
Yeah.
And you're talking about time. I think, it's sort of one of those things that we think of time as linear, past, present, future. But the truth is, we don't know. It could be, like you said, every moment in time that's ever happened and will happen and is happening right now at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating to think about. And some people have actually used that to say, well, that's part of the phenomenon we're seeing might be time travelers. They're just somehow able to hop that frequency, even though, you know, whatever's happening to them is happening now. Whatever's happening to us is happening in that same area. And they can somehow jump that frequency, almost like a radio dial.
I certainly hope that these little gray aliens or tall gray aliens or whatever they are not us from the future. I really hope that we don't turn out like that. But who knows? We're going to turn out the way we're going to turn out, you know?
Right. And I don't necessarily 100% subscribe to that, but I have heard that theory before, and there's certain, like, good points to it. But, yeah, I don't – to tell you the truth, I don't know anything, really. You hear so many different theories, and all of them sound very interesting, and there's certain pieces that make sense to me. There's certain pieces that don't that may make sense to others. But it's fascinating to think about. And
fascinating to think about, yeah.
Yeah, and it sort of keeps us busy.
So have you ever gotten any undeniable physical evidence associated with some of these cases?
I have not. I'm hoping to someday do that. That's sort of that's the thing that excites a MUFON field investigator, but also scares them, because you want to make sure that that crime scene's done well. You know, you want to rope it off. You want to make sure you get the samples just right, whether it's dirt, whether it's water, whether it's plants, whether it's swabbing someone's skin. That's why I'm like, whenever I hear someone at like a MUFON meeting or reach out to me saying, hey, I'm you know, former police or retired police, I'd like to be a field investigator. I'm like, please do it. Like, please, we need someone that knows, understands how to sort of contain an environment and get those samples. Because I just have the knowledge that MUFON's taught me. I don't have zero hands-on knowledge of taking soil samples and plant samples and biologics. So I hope I do it right. And I know MUFON has the MUFON University, and they have a video. I believe it's a state director from Nebraska who teaches the video. And so I wrote down his number and have it on speed dial, because if anything happens, I'm calling him and getting some advice.
Well, Nebraska's got a lot of farmland out there, a lot of corn, and, you know.
Yeah. I'd love to ask him if maybe they've seen some crop circles out there, because there's a million corn farms out there and all sorts of farms, really.
Yeah. And they say, well, that's just a guy out there with a board and a rope. Well, try that in a cornfield, you know.
Right.
You have to have a lot of leg power.
Leg power, and the ones I've seen are very precise. And if you actually take the stalks, they're not broken. You know, if you look under a microscope, they're almost like caused by heat. It almost like welds them into a certain direction. So
microwaves.
Yeah, and it's just you do have the people to try to fake it, but then you have ones where you go, yeah, we don't know how the hell this was made. Like, this is just way too pristine and even.
I heard a skeptic say, well, you know, that's microwave energy. I can take these plants and put them in a microwave and have the same exact result. Oh, wait a minute. You need an awfully big microwave out there in that field, pal.
Right.
Well, they don't think about that. They just, I've got my evidence right here that it's a hoax. Anyway. I wanted to ask you, too, about Bigfoot sightings.
Okay.
We have any of those in Utah?
Absolutely. So the Bigfoot area is in the northern part, and you have the Uinta Mountains, which is in the Uinta Basin, but you also have Lake Ogden and Layton, which is in the north. Mm-hmm. And there's a local researcher and a local UFOologist named Ryan Layton, and he's in all the newspapers from like the 90s. And he actually talked with the Shermans at Skinwalker Ranch. So he's but his main thing is the Bigfoot era. So I was digging through MUFON's Project Aquarius. For people who don't know, it's like this database that they just threw a bunch of articles in, thousands of them. And I was searching for Utah ones, and I found a Bigfoot one where they have this timeline of Bigfoot sightings in the area. And it's just unbelievable how many sightings we've had of Bigfoot. And especially specifically in the year 1980, there was over a dozen sightings within the Layton and Ogden area that were very credible witnesses that saw the typical Bigfoot, just a giant, hairy, man-like beast, like in the area. And it pretty much scared all of them. It would scare the hell out of me if I encountered one.
Were they able to get footprints cast?
Yep. Yep. Some of them were, they were able to get footprints. There was one that was next to a lake, and this couple saw it, and they said its eyes were glowing red, not reflecting lights. It was glowing red.
Wow.
And they hurried and left, but then they came back later and they found footprints. And if you ever want to know about the Bigfoot stuff in Utah, I can pass you along Ryan Layton's number. He has all the dirt and all the info on all the footprints and the evidence that he himself has sort of gathered through his investigation. I'm still sort of learning that area because I'm a UFO guy, but everything sort of spills out into that. And so I'm really interested in the paranormal and the Bigfoot. Because I don't know if you can just research one without looking into the others.
Yeah, well, I learned that. I used to just poo-poo the Bigfoot because I'm into UFOs. Well, now wait a minute. There's always sometimes there are Bigfoot sightings in the same area as UFO sightings. What's the connection? You know, and also, if they're coming through a porthole or a wormhole from another dimension, that's why we don't find any dead carcasses of Bigfoot. They come in, they go out. even if they're dead, they're taken up. So,
and I'm glad you said it, because sometimes when you sort of venture in that area, I know some Bigfoot people sort of get angry at that theory, but I'm sort of the same theory as you, that they're somehow popping into this reality and they're popping out.
Right. Right.
And I was talking with someone who says that a lot of the cases that they looked into Bigfoot, you can only see footprints going one way. But yet, if you look at the migration patterns of animals, a lot of times they'll stay in the same area and go back and forth throughout the area. But a lot of times when Bigfoot prints are found, it's just going one way and then they just kind of disappear. So yeah, I think they're somehow popping into this reality and then popping out.
Yeah, that's another thing. They're going one way and then they're gone.
Yeah.
So maybe that's when they're popping out of this existence.
Yeah.
Mr. Dustin Eskelson, where can we our listeners go to find out more about you, MUFON, Utah MUFON?
So we have a social medias. I run both of them, my personal one and that. If you just go to DustinEskelsonMyName.com, it'll go to my link tree. It has all the links to the Instagram, the Facebook, the YouTube. If you want to check out that YouTube video of Space Wolf Research, you can actually hear the sounds that Cody and I heard and see what we saw. We caught one of those orbs on camera. It was a pretty wild thing. And I'd just like to say thanks to Ryan Burns for allowing us on the property. And thank you, David, for letting me on this show. This is an absolute thrill to have me on. And
well, thank you, Dustin, for coming on.
Anytime, man. Whatever you need.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
And I want to thank you, the loyal listener. Go to WHFR's homepage, scroll down to We Are Not Alone, and click on the headline, which will take you to where you can find my website with all the archive shows. Or click on the Talk Shows button, then the We Are Not Alone button for the latest show archives. And please join me the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UAP phenomena. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you, to keep an eye on the sky.